What is crack-a-lackin', Hardwood Knox Party people? I am Dan Favalli, coming at you with my super-duper, incredibly esteemed, awesome times awesome, fantabulous, spectaculario. Cannot believe that Mike Conley was snubbed from the 2020 NBA All-Star Game co-host, Andrew D. Bailey. Before we get started, we have our usual housekeeping notes. I will try to blow through them super quickly since Andy already heard them once before today. A little bit of a mishap behind pulling back the curtain there. But first and foremost, please rate, review, and subscribe to Hardwood Knox on iTunes. You can also do the same wherever else you are consuming your podcast because we are everywhere. We are omnipresent. That is what Hardwood Knox is. iTunes, though, is still the best way to let us know that you're out there and listening. We appreciate every single review that we get. Constructive criticism is appreciated. Throw us that 5-star rating, though. Definitely subscribe. Make sure you're downloading all of our episodes. And if you've done all that, shout-outs on Twitter are appreciated. You can retweet our promos for the podcast or just word of mouth. Recommend us. Maybe not word of mouth. Word of mouth. Excuse me. Recommend us to a friend, family member, frenemy, coworker, acquaintance, rando on the street. They will all thank you later. Trust us. Follow the show on YouTube as well, youtube.com, search Hardwood Knox, we'll be right there. Like all our videos, subscribe to us, we appreciate that too. Follow Hardwood Knox on Twitter also, at Hardwood Knox, and then go ahead and follow Andy on Twitter, at Andrew D. Bailey. Follow me on Twitter, at Dan Favalli, F-A-V-A-L-E, and be sure to follow the Blue Wire Podcast Network on Twitter. That is a big help to us too, at Blue Wire Pods. Last but certainly not least, we want to shout out our sponsors for this week. You will be hearing from them shortly, betonline.ag and Untuckit. They help make this podcast possible, so be sure to check them out. And again, you'll be hearing from them incredibly soon. Andy, how the hell are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing good. I'm ready to dive into this podcast. The trade deadline has passed, so we've got a little bit of a reprieve. But as you know, player movement never stops in the NBA.
Well, I don't think players are going anywhere. I do want to ask you, before we actually get into the nitty-gritty of questions, did you see Joel Embiid's Instagram post?
Oh, yes, I did.
And then did you see his follow-up tweet where he was just saying, I love you, Philly?
I did not see the follow-up tweet.
It was...
I will continue to operate under the understanding that he's going to leave.
The whole, if you live long enough, you become the villain or whatever quote he posted. And then Jimmy Butler slides in the comments saying, I know a place where villains are welcome. And then Joel Embiid's like, basically, for sure, bro. And then he tweets a picture of himself with basically the message, I love you, Philly. It was all within like an hour, I believe, of each other. And so I'm not one to read too much into the Instagram stuff. I'd rather be talking about why the Bucks are just killing everybody, even when they don't have Giannis Antetokounmpo on the floor. But it was just funny because it was just a very wide range of happenings in just a very short amount of time. And it's just to see Philly, and we are going to talk about them tangentially in a second, just sort of implode. Like I don't know, from the perception of them or something. It's so weird.
Yeah, I'm seeing his most recent tweet now, and I don't know how reassuring that even is. Made for this. If I can take it, then you can too. So, okay. So he's just saying we suck and we're going to get through it together. I don't know. That was funny. And like you said, it's probably more productive for us to talk about. I mean, even I am guilty of this a little bit. I was looking at the box scores last night. I was flipping through games, and the Bucks are 46-7. It's just crazy. And I think there are a lot of people who are saying, "Hey, we need to pay closer attention to this." And so maybe the lack of attention is a little bit overblown. But yeah, they're phenomenal this season, and I think there are a lot of people who love the drama that we see on social media and stuff like that. But there's a heck of a story happening on the floor this season for sure.
And I don't know if it's so much the extracurricular stuff when it comes to the Bucks specifically, but it's everyone is so quick to deem the Lakers and the Clippers the top two contenders. And like not only are the Bucks on pace to win 71 games, but they're also outscoring opponents by nearly 8 points per 100 possessions when Giannis Antetokounmpo is off the floor. And that's a 2,000 plus possession sample size.
That's absurd.
That's just absolutely ridiculous. Would you call them your championship favorite right now?
Uh,
You're part of the problem. That's the
I know. I was going to say. I think I would, but it is sort of a three-horse race here. And I think the reason that people are so high on the LA teams, we have this we're predisposed, I think, in basketball to kind of discount teams who haven't done it before. And by done it, I mean win the whole thing. And these groups in LA haven't done it either, but they're led by guys who have. Like LeBron James has multiple titles, multiple finals MVPs, same with Kawhi Leonard. So I think people sort of default to that. But there's always a first time. I mean, there was the 2011 Mavericks, the 2004 Pistons, the first title that Shaq and Kobe won together. You know, the first Warriors title, like yeah. These dynasties don't just like they have to start somewhere. And for a team that's putting up the biggest point differential in NBA history on pace for 71 wins, like you said, I think in just about every other year, we'd look at them as a juggernaut. That first year, the Warriors won the title. I even think they were taken a little bit more seriously as a title contender than the Bucks are right now. And this Bucks team statistically is better than that first Warriors title team. Pretty sure. I might want to double check that. They're certainly on pace for more wins. So they're every bit a juggernaut. And I think if I had to pick one team right now and really settle on one, it'd probably be the Bucks.
I still think it's fair if you want to pick the Lakers or the Clippers, but it's not the Lakers and the Clippers and everyone else. It's the Lakers, the Clippers, the Bucks, and yeah. everyone else.
Yeah.
And there is the case that you said that the Bucks could be above even those two. And I talked about that on Monday's mailbag. So we will press on from there, which in turn means that it's time for our Bet Online AG Fast Five segment that will actually be faster than the first time we did it, where I spent 15 minutes on the five. BetOnline.ag is your online sportsbook expert. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for a 50% welcome bonus. Again, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for a 50% welcome bonus. What I've done this time, since it's a regular length podcast, and you get an overwhelming number of responses for the mailbag, is I've singled out five more questions from that solicitation, and we're going to roll through them. Are you ready, Andy?
Let's do it.
Our first question comes from Jordan Scott at JordanDan53. Everyone talks about how teams not being able to match up with the likes of Kawhi Leonard and PG or AD and LeBron, but there's really no team that can. The Nuggets added more guys with the physical profile to do it, but not the skill. Can that be enough? I'm assuming he's referring to Kata Bates-Jopp and Noah Vonleh, or he's just not talking about the trade line in general, and he's referring to the Jeremy Grant pickup in the offseason. Otherwise, I don't look at anyone on the Nuggets, even of those three guys, and say they're great matchups for that front court.
Yeah, I don't know if I would call them great matchups either. But I don't know if they're like, I don't know if they're any more, what's the word I'm looking for? Lacking than other teams. Like I think Jeremy Grant is a guy who you could throw on Kawhi or LeBron for possessions and not be just absolutely destroyed. You'd be kind of destroyed probably, but maybe not absolutely.
I mean, that's the goal, isn't it?
I know. Yeah. Nobody's going to stop those guys. You just have to slow them down a little bit. And I think, you know, we just mentioned that the top tier of title contenders is probably, the Clippers, the Lakers, and the Bucks. And in answer to Jordan's question, I do think the Nuggets are pretty close. I think they have a legit top 5 to 10 player, and that's enough to get your foot in the door in this conversation with Jokic. And they surrounded him with a bunch of guys that fit really well. Jamal Murray, one thing about him that I think is underrated is he's just got a really serious competitive streak. We saw that in the playoffs last year. We've seen that in a couple games here since he's returned from injury. I don't think, you know, Jokic and Murray isn't a top two like Kawhi Leonard and Paul George or LeBron James and Anthony Davis, but it's certainly in the next tier. And if you surround them with enough tough, gritty defenders, which, as Jordan said, I think they're trying to do, you get closer and closer to that top tier.
Yeah, I'm with you. They're in the second tier for me.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty darn close.
Yeah. And the thing about this year that's just so different than almost any other season I've watched is I wouldn't be stunned if someone from that second tier won the title. Like it wouldn't blow me away. I still think it's pretty wide open. you know, the Bucks are the favorite to me, and the Lakers and Clippers are right there with them. But the Jazz, the Nuggets, even the Raptors, I think, could come out of the East at this
God
point.
God damn the Raptors.
Yeah, it's crazy what they're doing. Speaking of a team that might need more attention.
We covered them in Monday's mailbag, too, just in case anyone's wondering.
Good. Yeah, there's just a bunch of teams that are really solid, and I think the Nuggets are absolutely in that second tier and maybe even knocking on the door of the first one.
It is amazing to wrap up on them that they're second in the West, and you know the Clippers are only they're tied in the loss column. They're only one win behind, so they're a half game back. But it feels like the Nuggets have been sort of Jekyll and Hyde all year, and yet they're second in the West. Like their game against the Spurs on Monday night was a perfect example where they were trailing by a zillion and then just won. It's so bizarre. So there's like an element of inconsistency there, which troubles you, but we have to respect the fact that they're second in the West, have a legitimate superstar, and they do have a really nice supporting cast, and the emergence of Michael Porter Jr. could end up being a really big swing piece for them.
Yeah, I agree.
Second question comes from Dennis Celery. Hope maybe he's the accountant from that AT&T wireless commercial at Top Flight DJ. If Portland doesn't make the playoffs this season, what changes will be made?
I think Portland has a built-in excuse to not make changes this time, because they were missing Yusuf Nurkic for basically all of the season that we've seen so far. I don't know when he's going to come back. Rodney Hood's been out for most of the season.
Zach Collins is only playing three games.
Yeah, Zach Collins has missed a bunch of time. So I think it'd be very easy for them actually to just say, you didn't see our full team, so we're going to run it back again. This question comes up, I think, probably every year, and not just on our podcast, obviously. Is it ever going to be time to break up the Lillard-McCollum backcourt? And I honestly don't know where I stand on that. Somebody said, gosh, I wish I could remember who it was. Somebody said something about they could trade McCollum and not be that much worse with Gary Trent.
oh my God.
Who said that? And he's been solid. I don't, you know, to expect him to suddenly replace the 20 points that McCollum gives you every night is maybe a little bit of a stretch. But the idea is maybe you get a bigger, again, this isn't new. Maybe you get a bigger wing to put along Damian Lillard and you can shore up your defense a little bit. But I'm sure we've said it on here, and it's pretty obvious. The chances of replacing a 20-point-per-game scorer, whether it's in the draft or somewhere else, it's not an easy thing to do. So I don't know. that's a very wishy-washy answer I'm providing for his question. I think what they're going to do is just say, let's get everybody healthy and let's take another crack at it next year.
I think the right opportunity has to present itself, and I'm just assuming – as you are, that the question is aimed at, will they break up the Dame and CJ backcourt? Maybe it's a little bit easier. I agree with you that there's the built-in excuse, and it's a legitimate one, to do nothing this summer. I mean, they picked up Carmelo Anthony off the street and have needed him to play a semi-big role. Maybe it's easier this summer to make the move, though, because you have Anthony Simons, but he's been very inefficient since his hot start. He's perked up a little bit in February before entering the concussion protocol for the league. But maybe that's sort of the impetus for you, or do you go the opposite direction? I know they really view their own players highly, but do you think about moving him in a blockbuster package for McCollum specifically, because they're not moving Damian Lillard unless he demands her out, and it just doesn't seem like he's going to do that. It would have to be the right opportunity. Like maybe it's a Sixers situation where if they look at moving Ben Simmons, but I don't know how much better a Ben Simmons would make Portland. You're not going to be one of the teams that can get involved in a Joel Embiid trade unless you're just not.
I think Ben Simmons would make them a lot better,
defensively, sure. They definitely need to surround. They need 3-and-D wings. They've always seemed to have guys who can do one or the other, hit threes or defend, but never anyone that can really do both. Ariza is probably the closest they've come, and since Wes Matthews, I think, and Nick Batum, like that team. So, there's that element there, and Dame can play off the ball. So, maybe that's one of the opportunities you look at, but it would have to be something like that. Like, you're not going to move CJ McCollum really for a collection of role players. I'm not even sure what team would have that. And you're not going to move him for draft picks and prospects because you're not a team that's operating on that timeline. And that's definitely not going to look good to Dame.
Yeah. So I think we're kind of on the same spot. They'd have to be blown away by something. Otherwise, they can just say, let's try this again.
Next question from Ben Wirt at Benjamin Wirt. What do the Wolves have to add in the offseason to make the playoffs next year?
Oh, boy.
A bunch of 3-and-D wings is really just
what it comes out. Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. That's easier said than done, obviously. I mean, that's kind of what everybody wants right now. But you've got, I think, a legit offensive top two in Russell and Towns, two very gifted offensive players. One is one of the statistically best offensive players ever in Karl Anthony Towns. Now you've got to surround those guys with people who defend, because as good as they are offensively, they're giving a lot back on the other end. Both of them are. They're just not great defenders. So you got to surround them with as many big switchy guys as you can. But again, I think that's just a lot easier said than done.
Yeah, I'm with you. And if you had to maybe sit, look, they have Jared Culver, they have Malik Beasley, neither of whom has been like this defensive juggernaut this season. So you sort of have those like 2-3 spots, at least, where you could maybe have average to above average defenders there. Although Malik Beasley, for his athleticism, he should be a much better defender. The real key might be putting someone alongside Karl Anthony Towns in the front court that can defend both the 4 and the 5. And so that it makes life easier for him. And I'm not, you know, they're not going to have cap space this summer. I don't believe. And so you're going to find them in that mid-level exception tier. And I don't know who would really be available for them within that price range. That's really going to make a difference on that front. And, you know, it might be a matter of they have their draft pick this year. Can they hope that they find someone in the draft? Can you find someone on the margins? But they're not going to have the resources this summer to go out and get, you know, just readily get those guys. Yeah. The upshot there is the market's going to be wonky anyway, because so few teams have cap space. Does your mid-level exception go further than you initially thought? But even sort of scanning, like, you know, Jeremy Grant, who has a player option, would be a great addition to them, I would think. But do you really have the money to get him if he opts out? Because he's making $9.1 million on his player option. So if he's opting out, you have to believe that he's going to get substantially more than that. Could they get a Jay Crowder? Is that someone that might help?
Yeah. Those are two interesting names for sure. The other problem that's obvious that the Timberwolves face is that they're in the Western Conference.
Good call.
They're always going to be – it's always going to be an uphill battle for them to make the playoffs. At least they've got Towns' friend in town, though. Now, seems like that was pretty big for him.
The Warriors are certainly hoping that playing in the Western Conference is going to hurt the Timberwolves. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Next question comes from Twitter user JM at Let's Make Wafers. Why is Devontae Graham's play this season not more widely heralded? I'm going to just jump in here and steal it and say it's because he's been very inefficient over the last, you know, 25 games.
He was a nice story for like a month.
There's still an element of, so he's shooting, he's slashing 33.7, 31.9, 82.1 over his last 26 games.
Sheesh.
Yeah, there's still an element of, hey, this is impressive to his season. He is fifth in points scored off unassisted three-pointers behind Luka Doncic, Trae Young, Damian Lillard, and James Harden. And while he's not hitting those shots at the same clip as at least three of those guys, the fact that he's taking them and that his role is so difficult, I think that's something to really look into and applaud. And we've seen that Terry Rozier isn't as effective on the floor without him. He really does open up space for everybody else when you watch the Hornets. So he's certainly having a good season, but the kind of all-star case that he was building through his first 25, 27 games, that really fell off, not just over the past few weeks, but over the past 2 months. And so I still think he's a great find, but that's probably why it's not receiving more coverage.
I'm just going to repeat those numbers again, and then we can move on to the next question. For his first 27 games, he averaged 20 points, shot 41.5% from the field and 42.9% from three. Then the next 26, which is the numbers that you laid out, 33.7% from the field on almost 15 field goal attempts per game over a 26-game sample. That's alarmingly bad. So yeah, he was a fun story for a little bit, and they need him to take these shots as you just outlined. But I think it's probably fair that he's sort of fallen off the radar here.
Our last question comes from Twitter user AJZ. Handle is @Mr_Zimmy. How have your expectations of the 76ers changed since the start of the season? How likely do we see them entering the postseason without home court advantage? Where does the team go forward if they get bounced in the first, second, or Eastern Conference Finals, respectively? I'm going to say I do not expect them to have home court advantage in the playoffs. I'd be pleasantly surprised if they erase the right now 2.5 game gap that separates them from the 4 seed.
I don't even have the I'm going to pull up the standings real quick. Oh, yeah, I don't think they're going to catch Miami either. Boston and Toronto, I think, are out of the question. It's 2.5 games between them and Miami. I don't think they get there either. My expectations have changed, certainly. I thought they were one of the handful of teams that could win the title. I'm not nearly as convinced of that as I once was. I still think their top-end talent, it should be really good. I mean, Joel Embiid's a very talented player. Ben Simmons is extremely talented. The fit that we were always worried about, I think, is a bigger problem than we may have expected with Al Horford and Joel Embiid. And Tobias Harris, paying him the money you are for him to just sort of be, I mean, he's an above average player, but I'm not sure how far above average he is. And when you're paying that guy $30+ million, that's a problem. Josh Richardson hasn't really popped for them. There's just a lot of interesting fit issues. And the one that I'm dancing around is obviously the fit between Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Simmons is just a much, much different player when Embiid isn't out there. So my expectations have lowered significantly for this team. I'm with you. I don't think they get home court advantage. And this offseason, I think a lot could be on the table. You know, you and I have talked about how we don't like to speculate over people's jobs, but Brett Brown, his job will probably be on the table. Elton Brand, maybe. And then the big one is, do they trade one of those top guys, Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid? Which one is it? Which one do you want to build around going forward? I think there are very legitimate arguments for both of them. I come down on the keep Ben Simmons side of that equation. I think there's fewer of us. We're like the never nudes in Arrested Development. There could be a lot of big questions on the table for the Sixers this summer.
I'm with you on this season anyway, and maybe there'll be something to they're better suited for the playoffs to really muck up those games. That being said, I think you need to come in with a certain level of confidence, which and morale and chemistry and synergy that they're just not going to have. And that's probably their biggest failure at this point. Is maybe that's where Glenn Robinson III and Alec Burks help them long term, is it just gives them the depth to sort of finish the regular season on a high note. Because with the way that it seems that this team is emotionally right now, I wouldn't pick them to win a playoff series with Miami if Miami's given home court advantage. And that's who they're lined up to face in the first round. I wouldn't be confident in picking it anyway. Yes, there's a path for them to get to the finals, but I wouldn't come close to picking them in a series with the Bucks. That's for sure.
Me neither.
But I'm not so inclined to break up Embiid and Simmons. It feels like they've built the supporting cast terribly around them, and that's the bigger problem. Is why wouldn't you focus more on off-ball offense and then guys who can defend? And look, Al Horford, his feet have definitely been, he's been dealing with an Achilles problem apparently, but he's been slower on the defensive end. You have Josh Richardson who can defend. Both they and Tobias Harris space the floor in theory, but those are all, with the exception of Richardson, Horford and Harris are guys who are used to working with the ball in their hands, or in Horford's case, playing a certain way that the Sixers aren't able to play when they have their main guys on the floor. The money doesn't work on this, so I'm not proposing the trade itself. But if you took Al Horford and replaced him with an Eric Gordon, I think the Sixers are measurably better just because he's so much better of a fit for their spacing and what he can do. And so is there a move that you can look at along those lines where, yeah, you're going to break up the starting five? I don't necessarily know who wants Al Horford's contract, but maybe
say it's difficult because I don't know how you trade Horford or Harris.
Someone will come after Harris.
I was going to say there's always somebody out there who will make a deal. I mean, the NBA has proven that time and time again. I just think those might be difficult contracts to move.
Definitely with you. I don't think the answer, though, in the face of, oh, we have these bad contracts on the books, is, well, then we need to trade one of our two top 20 guys. I just, that, and then I'm not so sure which one I would even pick. I I know that there's arguments for both, and I sort of lean Ben Simmons as well, but that's a decision that if they make, it's going to feel, to me, not genuine because they didn't give it a real shot, because I feel like they never built this roster the way it needed to be around its two best players. And to not tailor it to that pairing, I know it's not a perfect pairing, but you're still talking about two stars. I think that's a fundamental failure on the franchise's part.
I think that's fair.
There you have it. The betonline.ag fast five. Might have to change it to the first five with the slow fashion in which Annie and I do it. Remember to use promo code BlueWire, all one word, for your 50% off welcome bonus at betonline.ag. Ever see an untucked button down? They look bad. Why? Because they weren't meant to be worn that way. Thankfully, there's Untuck It, the original button-down shirt actually designed to be worn untucked. No matter your size or shape, Untuck It shirts always fall at the perfect untucked length. With more than 50-plus fit combinations, Untuck It shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic guys of all ages. You can find your favorite Untuck It style online or check out one of their 80 brick-and-mortar stores. Choose from styles like wrinkle-free button-downs, super soft flannels, outerwear, and more. With Untuck It, your shirts will never look baggy, bulgy, too long, or too big again. And their website is so easy to use, they even have a whole page devoted to helping you find your fit. So whether you're shopping for the perfect holiday gift or just trying to craft a smart, relaxed style of your own, Untuck It is the way to go. Visit untuckit.com and use promo code BLUE for 20% off at checkout. That's untuckit.com and promo code BLUE for 20% off.
After talking sort of that, I wanted to us to just sort of go around and look at the buyout market, what it could potentially be, and whether there are names that stand out to us that could be bought out that maybe we weren't thinking about already. Just as a reminder, the deadline to have those players off the roster is March 1st so that they can sign with a playoff team and be eligible to play in the postseason. We've already seen Marvin Williams and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist broker buyouts with the Hornets. Marv is in Milwaukee. I thought that was a great pickup for the Bucks. And Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is in Dallas. That is a questionable fit at best to me.
I don't get that one either.
And Tyler Johnson was bought out by the Suns, but as of this recording, we do not have his next destination. Is there anyone else to you that stands out that could potentially be on the buyout market coming? I know there's like the common names to mention, but is there anyone maybe, you know, off the beaten path that you think could broker a buyout that would really help a team?
Well, what are the common names you're thinking of right now? Tristan Thompson, even though they've said that they're not going to buy him out. I think there's been some buzz about Reggie Jackson. Off the beaten path ones, what I did was just go through all the Basketball Reference has a handy little list of all the player salaries all in one spot, and I just looked for expiring contracts on bad teams. I think there are some somewhat interesting candidates, a couple of Pistons, John Henson and Langston Galloway perhaps. Will the Knicks think about buying out Maurice Harkless? The Hornets have already bought out Williams and MKG. Is Biombo possibly next? Even Kent Bazemore in Sacramento. I know you're a fan of Bazemore's. Evan Turner's a guy who I think is a candidate for a buyout. I just don't know who would sign him after he was bought out.
He hasn't joined the Timberwolves, so my guess would be that he'll be bought out. Right. So since you threw out a bunch of names, Let's start with Tristan Thompson. What's interesting is, and it matters, I think, in his upcoming free agency market. And I didn't really think about it until some people pointed it out right around the trade deadline. I believe it was on the Dunk Don podcast, or Hollinger and Duncan were talking about it, that these players aren't going to broker buyouts because having their bird rights with the team is important, since there aren't a list of suitors available that are just going to give them raises or substantial contracts. And so it's easier for their own teams to give them money. And Tristan Thompson specifically has been mentioned as that guy. He's repped by Rich Paul, who's known for getting his clients paid. And so there's a strong chance he won't get bought out. But you look at that roster with Drummond and Love and Larry Nance Jr., I still feel like it ends up being a possibility.
They have to at least discuss it. That's a consideration that I did not think of before, the bird rights thing. And I think that's huge. A lot bigger than I was giving it credit for, obviously. But I think they, like you said, they've got a bunch of big guys there. So I think they've got to at least think about it. What it'll probably come down to is whether Tristan Thompson wants to go to a contender or not. He's a guy who's been with the team for a long, long time. You know, he's probably got a lot of equity built up with that organization. So it just comes down to whether or not he wants to stay.
I just don't, in this situation specifically too, I don't know how far his bird rights go if they have Andre Drummond on the roster as well. Because
that's fair too, yeah.
Even if he opts out, the implication of me would be they got him so that they could possibly keep him. But maybe he's also looking at it from the standpoint of if he does get bought out, he's probably going to Boston or the Clippers. And both of those teams, depending on what happens with Gordon Hayward's player option, and then depending on what happens with Marcus Morris and Montrezl Harrell in Los Angeles, project as taxpayers next season, in which case if you want to go back to them, you're only looking at the mini mid-level, and it's not even the full mid-level. The flip side is, I don't know who's going to give Tristan Thompson
who's going to give him more than that anyway, yeah.
So it's, and I hate to do that to bigs who are clearly good, it's just the market for them is so wonky right now, and so I still think he ends up being a possibility. You mentioned some Pistons too. I don't think they'll buy out Langston Galloway. He seems like someone who's valuable to them in the locker room, and I could see them bringing him back next year. I also don't know if they're committed to a full-on rebuild. They have Griffin, Derrick Rose. If Tony Snell opts in and Markieff Morris opts in, it might just be easier for them to, you know, maybe try and retinker this thing around Griffin. Reggie Jackson, though, is interesting because he is definitely not going to be back next year. And I'm wondering if you could see him potentially helping any team, even if it's just a matter of upgrading the third string point guard minutes or something.
Hasn't he already been connected to a team too? I don't want to say the wrong one, but
someone's probably mentioned the Lakers because I just feel like that's what happens.
I think it's the Clippers is the one that I saw, and I'm pulling it up now, and it was Mark Stein. Detroit's Reggie Jackson is still assessing whether to pursue a buyout or complete his Pistons contract, league sources say, but the Clippers have emerged as a likely suitor.
You want a fun Reggie Jackson stat?
Yeah, go for it.
He's shooting 39.2% on threes and 38.9% on twos.
Nice. Much like Devontae Graham over here. only slightly better in both numbers than Devontae Graham. Anyway, I guess it makes sense for the Clippers to just keep piling up depth. I don't know how much Reggie Jackson would help the Clippers in the playoffs. I'm not even sure if he would be in like an 8 or 9 man rotation. But I guess I can kind of get that. I don't know. He's only 29 years old, so he could probably still help somebody. But he's not a name that does a ton for me, in terms of, you know, whether or not I think he moves the needle for contenders.
This is probably a bad question to ask after he just went off on Monday night, but would Reggie Jackson represent an upgrade over the Rajon Rondo minutes for the Lakers?
Probably. How's that for an inspiring answer?
Maybe even Orlando. They're just so banged up all the time, it seems. Put another scorer on that roster and see what happens.
Yeah. Lots of for me on this Reggie Jackson segment.
Yeah, this is going to be your but-um podcast.
He doesn't really do a ton for me for any team. I guess he's probably a slight upgrade over Rajon Rondo. Orlando makes some sense, but they've already got Markelle Fultz and DJ Augustine, and I think Michael Carter-Williams has quietly been like decent for them this season. So I don't know. I have a hard time finding a real great fit for him.
I think I would agree with you on Orlando, but Carter-Williams was injured for a bit this season. DJ Augustine is injured now, has a knee problem. So, and their offense is just so topsy turvy.
True. The offense is generally just bad for them.
So I would consider it. Another name you mentioned where I think the bird rights come into play is Mo Harkless. I kind of feel like if he did get bought out that he just ends up being the Rockets backup center or something. But he's another guy where I don't know what the market for you would be, and you just saw the Knicks give out all these expensive short-term deals, and maybe you would be in line for a windfall if they don't do anything major in free agency, which it stands to reason that they won't, because the market just isn't conducive to something like that. So maybe he's someone that doesn't even enter the buyout discussion. Objectively, though, if they're not planning on bringing him back at all, he should broker a buyout. And then again, even if they're not, Mike Miller's been playing the veterans some pretty heavy minutes as well. that you might be able to actually contribute and do something for your own market there more so than if you signed with a contender where perhaps you wouldn't have the role that you would have in the Knicks. And he's replacing Marcus Morris. So like Marcus Morris's minutes are up for grabs, and you know, conventional wisdom says they'll go and they'll divvy that up again among Kevin Knox, RJ Barrett, Damian Dotson, but it's the Knicks, and so they probably won't. And it hasn't looked like they've been invested in playing the youth since trading Marcus Morris, though it's only been a 2-game sample. So there's that to consider, but he would be a name that I think would draw some interest just as someone who can guard bigger wings, and I would not put it past the Rockets one bit to sign him and hope that he can give them some minutes at small ball center.
You know what's wild about Mo Harkless is he's 26 years old.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
Wow.
Came into the league at 19. This is his 7th season, I think. 26 years old. I think he's younger than some people realize. He's also kind of a yo-yo in terms of three-point percentage. Like, if you look at his career three-point percentage, it goes 27, 38, 18, 28, 35, 42, back down to 28. Then up to 37 this year, so I don't know if you like. It'd be hard to count on what you're getting from him. At least as a shooter, I think what you can count on from him is solid defense, switchability, and he makes a ton of sense in a small ball type of scheme like what Houston is doing right now.
And you could call that a four out lineup around. Maybe you wouldn't have him on the floor in the minutes that Russell Westbrook is on the floor, but he does come close to giving you a four out lineup because he will take threes and he has hit them around league average before.
Yeah. And his, not that this is like completely indicative of rim protection, but he does average one block per 36 minutes over the course of his career, which is maybe a little bit more rim protection than you get from PJ Tucker. So I never even thought about the possibility of him being bought out and going to the Rockets, but that's very interesting to me now that you mention it.
Alan Crabb would be a name that I would pinpoint, but the Timberwolves actually seem to like him, and I don't think that you would have traded Jeff Teague for him if you didn't. Maybe they knew they were going to get D'Angelo Russell, but even then, I don't think you do that unless you...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't think you acquire Alan Crabb if you don't want to look at keeping him. And they can use a guy who can hit threes, and he's someone who, not so much this season, but he's proven that he can certainly do that throughout his career.
I looked at Crabb too, and I almost did the same thing that with Evan Turner that I did with Alan Crabb, where I saw his contract and I just thought, who's actually going to sign him if he does get bought out? Like you said, he does have a 38.8 3-point percentage for his career. But I just, is there anything else he provides on the basketball court? I don't know. He was one that I was sort of going back and forth on whether I'd even add him to my list.
Just for the potential shooting alone, there are some, the Clippers could use, they have Marcus Morris, but they could use a shooter. I wouldn't waste, roster spot on him for them at this point, but maybe even could the Lakers, is he more playable than a Troy Daniels for them?
Yeah, probably. that's an interesting possibility.
The Magic even, I'm just going to throw out the Magic for anyone who could shoot or score.
Yeah, as you
but
should.
I just don't think he's going to be someone who hits the market. Evan Turner probably will, and I actually have a name after him, but do you see a potential fit for Evan Turner anywhere? And I think the role for him would be he has some portability on the defensive end. He can handle the ball. Is there a pathway to just him helping out anyone?
I kind of the same. I'm even less inspired by Evan Turner than I am Reggie Jackson. He can play some backup point guard, I suppose. He's appeared in 19 games this season, 0-5 from three. I feel like the game has just sort of passed him by, unfortunately. This is a really small sample size, but his true shooting percentage this season is 42, and that's after it was 50 last year. For his career, it's under 50. It's just really bad. And maybe if you've got enough offensive weapons on your bench that you can surround him with, maybe you can survive those minutes. But that level of efficiency is just hard to overcome.
Just throw him back to the Celtics and see if he can regain some of that value that he built up in 2016.
Send all those guys back to Brad Stevens, Evan Turner, Isaiah Thomas.
The Celtics probably need more shooters overall themselves. They have a really good offense, but they're middle of the pack in three-point percentage, so that might not be – the best idea. Another name, though, also from the Wolves that stood out to me that I don't think is being talked about enough is Amari Spellman. I think that he's actually someone that, and I'm assuming the Timberwolves would get rid of him and Turner just in an effort to duck the tax this season. He's someone that I think would draw a ton of interest. The Rockets, again, he definitely seems like someone who could play a small ball five role for them. He's shooting 39.1% from three this year. And so that's a name that I think would be fairly sought after if he does hit the open market.
Yeah, that's one that I did not consider, and that he would be interesting. Maybe we should turn this podcast into who will eventually play center for the Rockets. But he's interesting. 8 points a game, almost 40% from three. That would be interesting. Why wouldn't Minnesota want to hang on to him? I guess just to deduct the tax, as you said.
Yeah, and there was a report that they're considering waiving him. So,
oh wow, okay.
Yeah, so it's just, I don't know. Maybe they're thinking differently. It could depend on how much they get back in a prospective Evan Turner buyout. But I can't imagine that he's going to give back that much money unless he has another destination lined up. And as we just went through, I don't know that you can guarantee that he'll have that. So
yeah.
I think when you're just looking at it to me, it wouldn't make sense, but you're also, I don't know what you've envisioned him as. You have James Johnson under contract next year. You have Jared Vanderbilt. You have Juan Hernan Gomez. Maybe you're looking for backup five to Karl Anthony Towns, and that's what you sort of view him as. I don't know, but I do think there's a pretty clear case to argue that, well, he's not really that he isn't part of the future, but he's also under contract for next season. Is that right? I didn't even realize that. For some reason, I didn't think that he was. So
yeah, he's under contract through 2022 with a team option.
So then you would just straight up have to, I don't know what would be the incentive for him to get a buyout, but if the Timberwolves considered waiving him, I would definitely think that someone would be interested in claiming him. I don't even think he would last, you know, a half day on the waiver market, waiver wire, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I think you might be right about that.
There was a name people were talking about, Solomon Hill in Miami, that I was a little bit surprised by. I don't think they view him as... Go ahead.
That was another one that I saw and just kind of put in the Evan Turner, Alan Crabb bin. He could get bought out, but I don't know who would sign him after that.
Oh, see, I was going the opposite way, where it's, I know he wasn't viewed as an asset in that deal with the Grizzlies and then the Timberwolves, but contract year Solomon Hill is once again shooting 38.1% from three and is someone that you can stick on bigger wings. If you're Miami, I just don't know. I'm not worried about re-signing him next summer. It's just, why would you get rid of that breaking case of emergency defensive option who has hit his threes this year?
That's a good question, actually. I don't know exactly why they would. Has he played at all for them since he came over? I know Jay Crowder's had two good games.
Oh, you're going to join the Jay Crowder bandwagon again? He has not played for the Heat since he was traded.
I've never left the Jay Crowder bandwagon. I don't know. I guess I didn't really think about it from Miami's perspective, what the incentive would be for them to cut him. But he's a guy that, again, I don't see really moving the needle for anybody.
Do you see a fit for Tyler Johnson?
Another one that's just, let's see, I'm looking at a
list. It's amazing how caught off guard you are on these questions.
I think it's just because I don't really, none of these players are really exciting to me. I don't think any of them do much for any contenders. Do you think there's a fit for Tyler Johnson somewhere?
He could be if you're, I don't like him on the Clippers as much as I would the Lakers, but I feel like he could be someone that would help them, just as someone who can theoretically shoot and maybe handle the ball a little bit. If you're looking like for, I'd be interested to see, because we kind of saw it with Wes Matthews last year where he went to the Pacers where they weren't really a contender, but you knew that he was going to get playing time. Is there a team that, you know, for one of these guys that can really do that this year? A Tyler Johnson in Orlando, maybe, not to recycle the same teams. A Tyler Johnson in the West is just so like stacked. I don't know if he would get playing time on the, you know, he's not going to get playing time on the Mavericks if he went there. OKC already has enough guards. Although, do you just start Tyler Johnson at small forward in OKC and call it a day? I'd try it.
No, I wouldn't.
Well, you're hating on all the good ideas. That's exactly why. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say maybe Orlando should just be our default for everybody.
Yeah, I mean you would think there might be more playing time available in the East Coast. Maybe Philly, but they have Alec Burks, so maybe Tyler Johnson is superfluous with that. If Kyrie Irving ends up being out for the rest of the year, just whatever. That's not the injury he's dealing with right now, but it seems like he's just always banged up. Maybe the Nets could use someone like that.
Yeah. The Nets are the team that threw him that big offer in the first place, right? And they've got a history of going back to that with Alan Crabb.
Yeah, they really messed up some cap books. Shout out to them.
They've got Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie. I guess they could probably fit him in there if Kyrie Irving's going to miss a lot of time going forward. But I probably sound like a broken record at this point. I just don't know how much any of these guys that we're talking about help people.
You definitely sound broken a little bit. I will give you that. Kent Bazemore was interesting. I never really considered him. He would probably be the best player that could. Yeah,
what does he do for the Kings?
Do they still fancy themselves playoff contenders? I honestly don't know.
They probably shouldn't. Although I guess, you know, mathematically they still have an outside chance. I can't imagine they'll catch Portland or Memphis or New Orleans. So what I was thinking when I saw his name on the list was just, you know, what function is he serving in Sacramento? And he's a guy who I think maybe could help some teams. We've talked about switchy wings. I think Kent Bazemore is smaller than people realize. He's 6'4". But he can still shoot the three a little bit. I think he can guard multiple positions. So maybe he's kind of the 3-and-D guy that some of these teams could use. Although his 3-point percentage over the last two seasons is just like barely over 32. So maybe I've oversold him as a 3-point shooter a little bit, but I think in theory, he's a guy who can fit that 3-and-D mold.
And he's under 30% since in his 10 appearances with Sacramento. I do think he provides some extra ball handling. He's always been to me overrated as a defender. And then he's probably been overrated as an offensive player the past 2 years as well. But he to have that maybe emergency ball handling, that could be someone on the Lakers that seems like they would help them a ton. I think you could actually name a bunch of teams, you know, a Philly. He could help a Philly. He could theoretically, if Boston just wants something that they think could shoot, he could help a Boston. Could he help an Indiana? That might be an interesting midseason acquisition for them. The Thunder, he could definitely be their starting three, maybe. I mean, you know, I say definitely maybe. But that's a team that maybe could go after him. The Rockets have always sort of had a weird love affair with him. He's Rockets
need all the sub 6'7" guys they can get, too.
Yeah, that's true as well. And so I think is he the best player that could potentially be bought out?
Geez, probably. I'm trying to think of all the other names we went through. Of the ones that we've talked about, I'd say he's probably the best. I mentioned Langston Galloway, and I think I put him on the list the same reason that I did Bazemore. It's just sort of what purpose does he serve for the Pistons? So maybe if there was some outside possibility that he'd be bought out, I think he'd be interesting for a bunch of different teams. But of the players that we've talked about, it's probably Bazemore.
My problem with Langston Galloway being bought out is that it feels like the Pistons could have gotten something for him at the trade deadline. And I know there were reports that said there weren't any substantial offers, but if you were going to just get rid of him for nothing, you couldn't even get a mid-second round pick for him. Yeah. So, and I mean, he does provide shooting and ball handling, but if he got bought out, I would definitely put him over the Bazemore tier. Go ahead.
Did you see how many points the Pistons scored last night?
A whopping 76.
if they're not fully committed to a rebuild, hopefully last night convinced them of that.
Do you know what's sort of disappointing? That the Knicks don't have more buyout candidates, because just the machinations there are weird, because there are these non-guaranteed and like team option salaries for next year that have partial guarantees of $1 million on them. And so you're looking at, you know, would they get rid of Alonzo Trier? Does he help anybody? They would be foolish to to get rid of Damian Dotson for nothing. He felt like someone who might have been able to get them a second round pick at the deadline or just be part of a larger package that got them something better. So the fact that they don't have like a, you know, we're looking at these really bad teams and they just don't have these wealth of players that could really be bought out. And it's probably because there aren't as many, usual number of bad teams where it's, you know, look at a team like, I was surprised that Phoenix ended up buying out Tyler Johnson just because they're still theoretically.
That surprised me too. I didn't see that one coming.
They're still theoretically in the playoff races. So you run into those issues like the Pelicans aren't going to buy out. If they were terrible, maybe they look at buying out Derek Favors, although he probably would have been someone that they would have looked at moving. Etuan Moore, could he potentially become a buyout candidate before the end of this month if they fall far enough outside the playoff picture? That seems like someone they might have been able to get a low second for too.
I also mentioned Biombo and Henson, and I think it's like the same talking point that we've had many times over the last couple of years. It's just the big man market is interesting to me. I think both of those guys can protect the rim a little bit, but I don't know who needs a third string center right now. I guess maybe if John Henson was bought out, maybe he'd be interesting in Utah now that I think about it. I mean, that's a team that could maybe use a little bit better backup center minutes. But I think the center market, as usual, is just kind of tough to gauge.
And the Clippers and the Celtics are the two teams that will be identified most in need of a big man. I saw something going around on Twitter about how the Clippers really don't need a big man, basically.
I don't think the Celtics need a big man either. But
they're 1-3 against the Sixers. And so if you could get a body that you would throw on Joel Embiid, I think that helps. Henson and Biombo aren't that. For the Clippers, Zubats is a really good rim protector, but I think he can be played off the floor in certain matchups. And that's what the issue for Los Angeles is. And then Montrezl Harrell might be undersized for certain opponents. And so that's why they need a big man. It's not because Zubats is terrible or that they're awful at protecting the rim. Like, that's not their problem. It's just that they need sort of a matchup proof five. And I think JaMychal Green is probably the closest they come. And even he's just on the smaller end for that type of role. That being said, I don't know. It's definitely not Biombo. And yeah. I haven't seen enough of John Henson this season to say it would be him either. Tristan Thompson would be their just whale in this.
Yeah. Anybody else we need to discuss?
No, I'm out of potential buyout names. The market seems like it's going to be sparse. It's not going to be like that year when Bellinelli and Ilyasova really just saved the Sixers regular season. I say saved, but enhanced is the correct word.
This is different. Even the guys who were already bought out and signed, like you said, I think Marvin Williams is a good pickup for Milwaukee, but I don't know if there's a great path to minutes for him there. And MKG on Dallas is just kind of weird. So I'm with you. I think the buyout market, generally speaking, is just different this year. It's not quite as inspiring as it's been in some other years. But if you have some guys that you think could be bought out that we didn't bring up, you can find us on Twitter to discuss that. I'm at Andrew D. Bailey. Dan is at Dan Favale, F-A-V-A-L-E. The show is at Hardwood Knox. The podcast network is at Blue Wire Pods. And as always, we encourage you to rate, review, and subscribe to the show. If you've already done that, please tell your friends and family to do so. And until next time, we leave you with the shout out to Benno Udrih and Kyle Anderson.